The next shar in the Orchos Sadikim is the Shar HaChanifos. Before we start, I'll just note that there was a well-known Talmud Chacham at Tzaddik, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Porat Yosef. Porat Yosef is a major Sephardic yeshiva in Yerushalayim in the Old City. You see it when you're walking down to the steps of the Kotel. The Rosh Yeshiva of Porat Yosef was a man named Rav Yehuda Tzadka. And Rav Yehuda Tzadka would learn, just as we do, with his students, the Sefer Orchos Sadikim. And he would come to this shar, when he would come to this gate, he would tell his Talmidim that this was the most difficult of all of the sharim, of all of the gates in the Orchos Sadikim. The shar of Chanifos, of flattery, that we're going to talk about now, is one of the most difficult to fulfill in our generation. He would say that it was a sugya hachamura b'yos mikol ha-sefer. It was a topic that is the most difficult topic out of all the topics in the book. And so I'm going to let you know that we're going to say a lot of things tonight that could be challenging. It could certainly question how we relate to certain people, relate to certain topics. We're going to try to give a balanced approach in how to relate to this midah. But even we can say that Rav Yehuda Tzadka, the great tzaddik and Talmid Chacham, struggled, so to speak, that he felt that this shar that we're going to learn has its challenges. What is chanifus? Chanifus means to flatter somebody. It means to flatter somebody, to say nice things about somebody who should not hear nice things and does not deserve to have nice things be said about them. So let's begin. The Orchos Sadikim, the main structure of this shar, of the shar of the Orchos Sadikim here regarding Chanifus, is really based on the Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah, which came earlier. And here, and in the Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah, so they list 9 types of Chanufa. We're going to go through all 9 types and how exactly we relate to them and what we can learn from them. The first type of chanufa, the first type of flattery, is telling someone who did a sin, who did a chait, that they didn't actually sin. That's the worst type of chanufa, says the Orchos Sadikim. If you know somebody did an avera, to go and tell them, no, you did it was fine, no big deal, it's perfectly okay, no issue at all. So that is usur. And he gives a number of reasons why that's a problem. He says, first of all, you're being lax in giving tochacha, in rebuking somebody. There's a mitzvah of tochacha we know from last week's parsha. You're also saying sheker and not emes. That's also in last week's parsha. Causing lifnei iver, you're causing this person to continue in that path and causing them to sin. You're preventing them from doing tshuva, because how are they supposed to do tshuva and to fix their actions if nobody tells them they're doing anything wrong? You're harming those who the sinner harmed, because they are the person who harmed them. The sinner is not going to feel bad about hurting another person. The Pasuk in Mishlei says, you're being matstik a rasha. You are saying that a rasha is a tzaddik, and that is a to'eva, an abomination, a terrible thing. And then finally he says, it's a chil Hashem, especially when you do it in public. To get up in public and to say somebody who did an avera is really doing the right thing is a terrible chil Hashem. And he quotes a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Aleph, talks about the mitzvah of Hakel. We know at the end of the year, after the Shemitah year, they would come to the Beis HaMikdash, and the king would read from the Torah to the Jewish people. And the Gemara says that one time, one of the kings of the Jewish people was Melech Agrippas. There's a Rehov Agrippas in Yerushalayim. And he read from the Torah at Hakel. And the Pasuk says that you may not put a foreigner, someone who is not born Jewish, to be a king upon yourself. Lo sucha laseis alecha ish nachri. That a non-Jew is not allowed to be the king. And when he read that, he began to cry, because that applied to him. Agrippus was not born of a Jewish mother. And he realized that that was a problem, that he shouldn't be the king. So the Chachamim got up and said, don't worry, Agrippus, don't worry, you're our brother, everything's okay. So the Gemara goes on to say that the Chacham were wrong for flattering Agrippas. That was wrong. He was not supposed to be the king, and they said it was okay. We see, says the Orchos Sadikim, that chanufa, that flattery, means that not only do you not rebuke the person for improper behavior, but instead you congratulate them. And the Gemara goes on to discuss how bad chanufa is and how terrible it is. But this is point number one, to tell somebody who did a sin, they didn't actually sin. Number two, that you praise a Rasha in front of the Tzibor for his good qualities and good actions. Now, this causes people to think the Rasha is a tzaddik. It causes people to respect this sinner and to listen to what he has to say, to mimic his actions. The Mishnah Nagayim says, Oy la Rasha, oy l'shchena. Woe is to a Rasha, woe is to the neighbor, because a Rasha influences people around him. It also takes away kavod from the proper people who should be honored. So, if you won't speak negatively about someone who does the wrong thing, says the Orcha Sadikim, don't say anything at all. It's like a reverse on the old advice our parents give us. If you have nothing nice to say, then don't say anything at all. But in this case, it means you have nothing nice to say to tell the sinner that he's doing the wrong thing, then don't say anything at all. This gets into a complicated discussion, which we're not going to have right now, about, you know, people who are Mechal Shabbos, they intermarry, they don't keep kosher, but they give a lot of money to the yeshiva. So how are you supposed to honor them? Should you honor them? Should you make a dinner for them? A person who's not religious and they give a lot of money? So that's a complicated discussion, not for right now. But that touches upon this aspect of Chanufa. Number three, praising a Rasha, a sinner, only in his presence with nobody else around. Nobody's going to learn from what you said. It won't cause a Chil Hashem, or it won't cause lifnei iver people to sin, but it will make him think that his behavior is proper. People who are, and he, the Orcha Sadikim writes something so profound over here. He says that people who are not Sadikim, people who are not righteous, when they are praised, they generally feel that the praise is correct, and the chanuf is the right thing, right? When you praise somebody who's not such a big tzaddik, or not such a great person, you say, ugh, why, you're such a humble, wonderful person, and they say, ah, you're right, I am. I'm a very big anav, a very, very humble person. So that person is not obviously a tzaddik and not an anav. But says the Orcha Sadikim, tzaddikim, very special people, aren't inflated when they're flattered. They understand that there is always room for improvement, and they look for constructive criticism. The Gemara in Nida says, Afilu kol ha'olam omrim alecha she'atza tzaddik. Even if the entire world is telling you that you are righteous, havei be'enecha k'rasha. You should view yourself as a Rasha. Now, it doesn't mean you should view yourself as a Rasha, but you should be realistic. You should always have a sense of self-doubt. If somebody's praising you, say thank you very much. You know, thank you for saying such nice things. But internally, you should say, you know, but I can do better. And maybe they don't understand that I'm not so perfect as they think they are. Number four, befriending a Rasha. This doesn't mean that you cannot be pleasant or courteous to people who behave improperly. But you don't have to support their improper behavior and be mechazik them with our friendship. If you have a person who is doing averos and terrible things, it doesn't mean you have to go and spit in their face and, you know, make a whole fight. But it doesn't mean you have to be their best friend and invite them to your, you know, kids' bar mitzvah. That's not what it means. The Gemara in the end of Megillah says that it's usur lehistakel bifnei harasha. It is usur to stare at the face of a rasha. And this is why we know Yitzchak Avinu became blind, because he stared at the face of Esav. Now the Orcha Sadikim says that Yitzchak didn't even know that Esav was a rasha, right? Remember, Yitzchak thought that Esav was a good person. And still, by staring at the face of Esav, it caused him to go blind. Look how careful, says the Orcha Sadikim, we must be when it comes to befriending those who knowingly sin. You can be pleasant, you can be courteous, you can have good manners, but it doesn't mean you should become very close with them. He says, you're becoming close to somebody who is not a fan of Hashem. People may copy you. Other people will associate with this Rasha and he will harm them. The Gemara in the beginning of Yuma says that Reish Lakish was very, very sparing and careful with who he spoke with in public, to the extent that if a person was talking to Reish Lakish when he was seen speaking as this person in public, people would give him a loan, even without any witnesses, about his character. If Reish Lakish was talking to you, it meant that you must have been a very special person. So we have to be careful about who we associate with. Obviously courteous, obviously friendly, but to open up and to, you know, bring every single person we meet into that circle, one needs to be careful to make sure they're people of upstanding character. Number five, a respected community member who uses his name and position to give leadership roles to someone who is improper for the position, right? You have a friend, you have a colleague, someone you know, a family member, and you use your position to give them a job, but they're not right for the job. Or saying that somebody is honest and trustworthy when in fact they are not is a violation of Chanufa. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that someone who appoints an unqualified rabbi or judge, so that person, it's as if they planted an Asherah tree, a tree of Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. Don't appoint people just because they're close to you or because you're friendly with them. Put the right people in the right positions. Number six, someone who can stand up and protest and does not. When you could say something, but you choose not to, this causes the person who misbehaved to feel that their actions are acceptable. There's no concept. There is a concept in Judaism of Kol Yisrael Revim Zeh LaZeh, that each Jew is responsible for another. The Mishnah in Shabbos tells us that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was not concerned about his own animals not doing work on Shabbos, and the Chacham were upset. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah didn't watch his animals on Shabbos, they didn't do work. How could that be? So the Gemara says, no, that's not what it means. What it means is that it was his neighbor's animal, the cow, the ox of the neighbor of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, did work on Shabbos. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah didn't say anything. He didn't speak up. And therefore, because he could have said something and he chose not to, the Gemara views it as if he did it himself. If you can protest against the terrible acts of a person, of somebody in your household, or somebody as a neighbor, and it would help, you know it would make a difference, and you choose not to, then you will be held responsible for their sins. If you could protest against the acts of a city or the entire world, and it can make a difference, and you choose not to say anything, then you will be held responsible for their actions. Number seven, someone who doesn't protest because they think that their protest won't work. So the Gemara in Erechin says that you should give Musar even if the person will ignore you, or even if they're going to hit you back. Now this gets into the complicated discussion about when to give Musar. This is a common question that we have sometimes in school. When do you say something? When do you not say something? When do you speak up? When should you stay quiet? We have a conflicting Gemara. The Gemara in Erechin says you should give Musar even if the person's going to want to take a swing at you and punch you in the face. But the Gemara in Yevamo says, Kashem Shemitzvah al-Adam Lomar Davar Hanishma, just like it's a mitzvah to say something that will be heard, Kach Mitzvah al-Adam Shalom Lomar Davar Shanishma. It's a mitzvah to also keep quiet if no one's going to listen to you. So how do we resolve this contradiction? Everybody understands the contradiction over here? On one hand, the Gemara says you should tell somebody to stop what they're doing, even they're going to try to punch you in the face. On the other hand, it says it's a mitzvah to not say anything if you know it's not going to be heard. So the Gemara seems to say that you should not give tochacha if it's not going to be listened to. So the answer may come down to the idea of time and place. It depends on the time and place and the person, and what will be most effective. The Minchas Chinuch, the Aruch HaShulchan say, there's no mitzvah of tochacha, of rebuke, for someone who's not religious. If they're totally not connected to Judaism, then tochacha, telling them, you did a melach on Shabbos, you shouldn't eat that thing, is not going to work. The Ber Halacha, the Chavetz Chaim, says that there's only tochacha when it can be enforced by Beis Din, but we don't have Beis Din anymore to carry out any of our rebuke. And the Chazon Ish says that nowadays we don't have the kelim, we don't have the proper abilities to give tochacha, to give rebuke like they did in the days of the Gemara. So there's a lot of things limiting it as to why we don't give rebuke like they did in the days of the Gemara. But if you think that your words will be receptive and heard, you have to say something. If not, we could be held accountable. Chas v'shalom. Number eight, says Yoruch HaTzadikim, is someone who doesn't protest when he knows that protesting won't work. Instead, you just sit there and the people will just do the wrong thing. Meaning you're witnessing, you're in that moment when somebody's doing something and you're a silent bystander, you are justifying their actions. Get up and walk away or say something. But if you see somebody doing something wrong and you sit there quietly, that is a form of chanufa. You are flattering their actions. The Nemuka Yosef in Yama says that there's a mitzvah tochacha for an individual whether or not he's going to accept the mussar. But when it comes with the tzibur, you shouldn't give mussar if you know they're not going to accept the mussar. For the tzibur, you have to make one protest you have to know. Sometimes you need to get up and say, guys, this is wrong. Even if they're not going to listen, and walk out. That people should know that you don't approve. But if you sit in a place and people are doing the wrong thing, so then you sit there quietly and accept it, and it's as if you agree with what they're doing, so then it could be a problem. Yeah, Tamar.
What if they know that they're doing the wrong thing, and by you like saying something or like picking them out, they'd just be embarrassed?
Is it in public or is it private? Is it in public or private?
Public, okay.
If it's in public, and people are going to watch them, and then they're going to look at you, and they're going to say, ah, you know, Tamar stood there, and she didn't say anything, so it must be Tamar thinks it was the right thing, or she agrees it, then we have an issue. You have to show in someone that you don't approve. Because if you don't say you don't approve, then your silence is supporting what they're doing. Your silence is supporting what they're doing. You have to get up and walk out, you have to say something.
What if they know they're doing the wrong thing, though?
But what about the people who are watching? What are the people who are watching you? It's not for the person who's doing the Avera. They know they're doing the wrong thing, and they're not going to listen to anyway. But what about the seven people in the room who are going to say, I guess it must be okay. You know, nobody said anything. It must be what they did is okay. You must support it, right? It's like the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. The Chachamim stood there while Kamsa was being embarrassed. They didn't say anything. So he said, they must agree with what happened to me. They must agree with what was being done. We can't. There's no concept of being a bystander in those cases. A person needs to be clear that if they can relay in some way to the people watching that this is not okay, then that's what then that's the best thing to do. Okay. The last part of Chanufa number 9 from the Shari Tshuva Nir Chasadikim is someone who doesn't praise the sinner. However, you honor him without speech, but with your actions. I don't say anything, but I treat him nicely, and I give him nice things. And he says, the Orach HaSadikim actually writes something interesting. He says, this chanufa is allowed in a case of danger or sakanas nefashos. If a person is in a dangerous situation, and by not agreeing to the person, but you don't have to say anything, you can act in a way that will support them, then you're allowed to do it. The Gemara tells the horrifying story of a rabbi who was going on his way, and there was a serial killer, like some type of terrible person on the road, and he killed the person he was walking with. So the guy was obviously psychotic. So he turned to the rabbi and he said, "New rabbi, did I do a good job of shechting this guy?" So the rabbi said, "Oh yeah, I did a good job, but you might want to work on this thing." He made like some comments, like he didn't say it was like okay, but like he also didn't say it was wrong. So there's a big discussion. How could he say that? Like you saw a guy murder somebody, you didn't say anything that it was wrong. So the answer is no. That's crazy. If you tell the murderer, "Ooh, I don't think that was a good idea. I don't think your mommy's going to like that." So then I don't think that's going to go over well for the serial killer, and he's probably going to take it out on you. So. For that reason, in the case of Sakana, we're more lenient to try to not support openly, but also you don't have to necessarily say anything negative. So these are the 9 categories of Chanufa brought down in Yeruch HaSadikim. So first, let's talk about some types of good Chanufa. When is Chanufa good, right? Every midah has a good and a bad. And we'll talk about some other types of bad Chanufa. And then we'll talk about how do we work on Chanufa. How do we perfect that midah? So what's a good type of Chanufa? So first of all, he says, is honoring tzaddikim. Flattering tzaddikim, tamid chachamim, will cause people to want to listen to them, to mimic their actions, to put them up on a pedestal. He also says you should flatter your spouse. You should flatter your husband and your wife for shalom bayis. You should say nice things to them, even if, it might not mean it 100%. It's good for shalom bayis. You should flatter your teacher. Flattery is also good for your teacher, he says, Yoruch HaSadikim. And he says, this is why we sometimes use very exaggerated titles for rabbi. Like every single rabbi is Harav, Hagon, Shlita, everybody is like, the biggest genius, the biggest Talmid Chacham, because it could be a form of flattery. We're trying to promote Kavod HaTorah. Okay? You know, nowadays, if the rabbi is not called like Harav Hagon, like the great genius, it could be like, you know, he's like a schleppy Nebuch. So we like a lot of titles nowadays to make people feel good. And you should be mechanef your friends as well. You should flatter your friends, make them feel good, tell them that, you know, they, you know, say nice things to them, make them feel good about themselves, even if you're not 100% sincere. Chanuf is good when it comes to your friends. Doing so will help your relationships and allow you to learn from one another. You're allowed to flatter someone you owe money to, says the Orcha Tzaddikim, so they won't pressure too much you to repay the loan before it's due. This is a big question in Hilchos Ribbis. The Sefer Bris Yehuda, which is an important sefer on the laws of loaning with interest, the Ger Rebbe, the Pnei Menachem, on his comments on the Levush in Yeridei by Hilchos Ribbis and Simukov Samech, note that generally, if I lend you $1,000, okay, and now you owe me $1,000, according to the halacha, according to Shulchan Aruch, if you go and you are super, super nice to me, and you say super nice things about me after I lent you $1,000, that could be a violation of ribbis, of lending with interest, because I'm getting back more than I gave you, because I gave you $1,000, but you're going to give me back $1,000 plus all those nice things you're saying about me. So you shouldn't be too overly nice to somebody who lends you a lot of money, because it could be like you're repaying them more than you got. So the Bris Yehuda and the Ger Rebbe both say that this is not an issue of ribbis, because the chanifa, the flattery, is to prevent the lender from pressuring you to return the loan before the time is due. So you wanna flatter the person, and the person lends you the money, so he won't come knocking at the door before the time the money is due. What else? He says, if there's someone who you think will be drawn to Torah and mitzvos with flattery instead of tochacha, then it's a mitzvah to flatter that person. If you have a friend, you meet somebody, and you think you can draw them in back to Judaism by flattering them, by chanufa, saying nice things about them, then do that instead of giving them musr, because maybe that will be more effective as well. That's what the Orcha Tzaddikim says. What are some bad types of chanufa? So he says, first of all, don't flatter in order to get kavod from people. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. He says it's terrible to flatter somebody to gain trust so you can deceive them later on. It's like setting a trap with food to capture an animal. It's not nice, it's mean. You're going to be super nice to them so they open up and you'll take advantage of them later on. You shouldn't be gonev das, gnevas das, meaning, you know, portraying something that's not the actual case, by flattering somebody, by telling them that you were doing something special for them when in reality you were doing it anyway. What do I mean by this? Let's say somebody comes to your house and you were baking chocolate chip cookies, and they walk and they say, "Ah, so you knew I was coming over and you baked my favorite chocolate chip cookies. That is so sweet of you. You are so nice. But really, you were making cookies anyway, and you didn't really care your friend was coming over." So, says Yerucha Sadikim, if you then say to them, "Yes, I did make these cookies special for you because I think you're just the greatest person. I want something special for you." So that's chanufa. That's not honest. It's gnevas das. You are portraying something about yourself that is not the case. Better you should say, "Not the case. I am making cookies because I was stam baking, and I was making cookies because I wanted to make cookies. But now that you're here, I'm so happy that I can share these cookies with you because I know how much you love them." Don't be gonev das. Don't portray yourself as being much better and nicer towards a person when in fact that wasn't your intention. The Gemara in Chulin, in the end in Chulin, Daf Salidal, tells the story of Mar Zutra, who is traveling from the town of Sikra to the city of Mechuza, at the same time that Rava and Rav Safra were going to Mechuza as well. So they both met each other on the road. And they met, and Mar Zutra assumed that the two Talmid Chachamim were there to meet him. They came out to meet him, to bring him into the city, to escort him. "Ah, it's so nice. Look, my friends are coming to meet me, to bring me into the city. Ah, it's so special of them." So he told them, "Oh, guys, you shouldn't have gone through all the trouble. You came out here to see me. Ah, it's totally unnecessary." I think we all can relate to this type of conversation. So Rav Safra told Mar Zutra, "If I knew you were coming, maybe I would have. But the honest case is, I was just walking in the same direction, and it's nice to see you." So don't be gonev das, right? Don't portray yourself as doing something extra nice for somebody, as being mechanat them, when in fact that wasn't your intention. Be careful about being honest with people and telling them if you were really doing something special for them, or it just happened to be a coincidence that it worked out in that way. Then the Orach HaTzaddikim tells the story that is brought down in the Sefer Chassidim of Yehuda HaChassid about a good man who had a daughter to marry off, and there was two potential bachrim who wanted to marry the daughter, and he wanted to know which one was the better one. He wanted to know which one was the better shidduch for his daughter. So what did he do? He went to a friend of his, and he made up that they were in a fight. And then he went to these two bachrim, these two men, and he asked them to judge between him and his the fake fight. He wanted to test him to see, like, his judgment, how he is as a human being. So one of the bachrim flattered the father of the girl, and, you know, he's such a wonderful person, I think you're such a great guy, and he agreed with every single thing that the father of the girl said, and they were, like, on super good terms. But the second bachar, the second potential shidduch, said, "What are you talking about? You're not right. The other man is right. You know, I don't. You're not correct at all." Meaning, the first guy wanted to be judged, the father, the potential father-in-law, the right way, to be in favor, so he could marry the daughter. Right? He wanted the bachar wanted to be nice to maybe his future father-in-law, so he can marry this girl. But the second bachar says, "What are you talking about? You're wrong. You shouldn't have started the fight. You're 100% incorrect." So the father of the girl said that, "I really think you should marry the second guy, because he's a good person, because he wasn't mechanef me, he didn't flatter me, he didn't show any prejudice, he told me what it was, he was honest with me, he tried to put me on the right path. Those are the people you should have as friends, not as what we call nowadays yes men or yes women, people who constantly tell you that you're right, that you're the best, you don't do anything wrong. You want to surround your people with people who are not mechanef you. You want to surround yourself with people who will tell you when you're being, you know, an idiot. We'll tell you when you're doing something wrong in a positive, constructive way, not people who tear you down and make you feel like garbage, but people who are there for you and say, no, I don't know if this is the best thing for you. You might want to stay away from that. Those are the people that you want to surround yourself with." And then he says, if you're in a leadership position and you flatter people, there's not going to be any respect for one another in the community, because people always think it's about favors and complimenting and doing what's best for the other person, and it's not going to work out. So try to limit the chalufa. So now at the end here, says the Orach HaTzaddikim, how can we work on the midah of chanifa, of flattery? So he says two things you must stay away from. The first thing is to stay far, far away from kavod, from pursuing honor. Because if you don't need kavod, then you won't need to flatter people in order to get kavod from them. For example, someone who has a very nice voice, he uses it so people will flatter them and he'll give them kavod. People will flatter me for my voice, people will compliment me. No, that's not how you should do things. If you're not looking for kavod, then you won't need to flatter people to get kavod from them. The other thing you should stay away from is to try to get benefit from other people. You should always try to be self-reliant. So whenever, if you don't need to rely on somebody else to get things done, try to do it yourself. You won't tell someone that they are doing the wrong thing because you want something from this person and you don't want them to cut you off. If you're always mooching off other people and you're always riding off of other people, so then let's say, Lamashal, I think we can all appreciate this. Let's say you're in a carpool and somebody gives you a ride to school every day, so you don't have to take the ichi bus, right? So you're in a carpool and the person drives you. So you really want that drive to school so you can wake up later and whatever, it may be good for you. Now, if you need to be mechanef this person, you need to flatter this person, they give you a ride, and then, you know, the person, like, doesn't wear their seatbelt, and, you know, they go through red lights and they're not responsible, but you have to keep quiet, right? Because if I say something, they're going to kick me out of the carpool, they're not going to want to drive me anymore. So no, if you're always if you always need things from other people, there are benefits, so you're not going to speak up. So if you stay away from kavod, and you stay away from trying to mooch off other people, you'll be in a better place to not need to be mechanef to flatter people when they're doing the wrong thing. And then he concludes by telling us that we are influenced greatly by our friends and community. And when we live with tzaddikim, we surround ourselves with yirei shamayim, then we will learn from them. And if you live in a community of people who do the wrong thing, then you will follow in the wrong path. And he says, if a person finds himself in a very evil place with a lot of bad people, it's better to live alone. I just want to end with a beautiful vart from Rav Meir Shapiro, better known as the founder of the Daf Yomi, Rosh Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. He says, what was the lesson that Hashem was attempting to teach Paro by sending the sign of the staff that turned into a snake? So Rav Meir Shapiro explains that Hashem knew that Paro would not be able to comprehend why Hashem would redeem Bnei Yisrael, who were at the exact same low spiritual level as the Egyptians. Why should they get out? The Egyptians and the Mitzra and the Jews are doing the same exact things. They're worshiping the same Avodah Zarah. Why do they deserve to come out? So Hashem addressed this thought of Paro as follows. As soon as the staff, the stick of Moshe, left his hand, it turned into a snake. And when he picked it up, it turned back into a stick. What does it symbolize? Says Rav Meir Shapiro, this symbolized the influence of a person's environment. The stick changed its essence while being in front of Paro. And after the stick re-entered the realm of Moshe Rabbeinu, it reverted back to being a stick. And the same holds true with Bnei Yisrael. When we are amongst the Egyptians, when we surround ourselves with people of bad influence, we can fall spiritually to the extent that one may wonder why they even deserve to be redeemed. But as soon as we attach ourselves to Kedusha, we rise up again to the level of a true Jew. And if Hashem is trying to tell Paro that if you allow Bnei Yisrael to leave your country and its bad influences, Bnei Yisrael will distance themselves from the impurities of Mitzrayim and reattach themselves to Kedusha. And that is the lesson for who we surround ourselves with. If you are connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, you'll be a stick, you'll be a holy staff with the name of Hashem. And if you're in front of Paro, you'll be a snake, you'll be a serpent that slithers around on the floor. So that is the Orchos Chanufa from the Orchos Tzaddikim.